I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Hey guys, it's Talitha from Vine Wine. 750 has been the greatest revolution to wine buying in the last 10 years. The ability to be able to go online, search out one item, a Palo Cortado, a new cider, some Chinon, and have all of the answers and the great bottles in front of you in 2 seconds is something that has changed my life. Makes buying easier. I'm able to create lists late at night of wines that I've just tasted that I want to buy later. I'm able to search out wines from new importers that I've never even heard of. I'm able to find crazy stuff from Czechoslovakia that I didn't even know I wanted. You should be on 750. It's the way to be.
Renato Vaca of Cantina Del Pino on the show today. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So you're at Cantina Del Pino and you make Barbaresco from Ovello and from other vineyards in Neve. When did you get started there and what is the history of the estate?
Basically, I started to make my own wine and to bottle our own production under the name of Cantina Del Pino in 1997. Because before that, my father, my family was involved in a cooperative, which is a very well-known cooperative in Barbaresco called Produttore de Barbaresco. Actually, my father was one of the founders of this cooperative in 1958, and with my two uncles. They were like families that they were closer to the church, to the priest, to local priest, and Don Fiorino, that was the name of this priest. They had this idea of basically starting a production as a group of family instead of selling the grapes Nebbiolo in the market, where bigger and famous names, for many years they were making already the vinification with these grapes, but of course the price point of the grapes was always a little bit low, and then they were always struggling with the price of these grapes. So doing the effort to grow through all year these grapes and then getting low price basically was the first idea, like, okay, we get to produce our own, we have to do our own project and to do our own bottling of wine and to start our own production. So there were my father and other six other families, they were the first to start this project in 1958. And of course, many families after this, they were joining this project, was growing little by little. They were starting to do a good business. The economy was starting to get better. So apparently this was starting in a very good, positive way.
Because it's a cooperative that a lot of people think makes really good wine today and in the past.
Absolutely. And so basically now the cooperative has been grown to 60 families. And my father, being one of the members, was very close, was very involved. My uncle too, Celestino. My father is Adriano. So they were putting their own ideas, and they were really cooperating. So they had this. We have this history of cooperation, I would say. And so for me, of course, it was not easy to convince my father to do this step, and to leave the cooperative at one point. In 1997, because of course was very close and was very, feeling part of this group of producers.
And how many producers have left the cooperative since it started?
I would say not many, because the cooperative is doing very well, and they are paying very well the grapes. This is a very important key, of course. And so I believe four only. We were one of the last, because actually it's always challenging. Barbaresco, like Barolo, it is a wine that is not produced and then sold the next year. It's a kind of wine that requires investments, requires time before to be released.
Because you have to age it for 3 years before you can.
Yeah, 3 years minimum. And so it's a big step to do, and to move from vine growing and selling grapes to sell wine. So basically this required for the first years to do to sell some wine in bulk and slowly to reach what we do now, that we bottle is all estate bottle wines and all our production.
So you're 45 years old now.
Yes.
When did you get started with the winery? I guess you grew up in the area.
Yeah, I grew up in the area. And in the area, of course, it's a rural area where when you grow up, you are always asked by the family to do your collaboration, even when I was going in school. So I grew up in this. I grew up where I'm still living now. So it's four generations that we live in the same house. And we have the same land. And so I was asked to give my collaboration. So I started to learn a little bit the works in the vineyards when I was a kid. And of course, I was kind of like a little forced to do this because it's not always what a kid wants to do. But actually, it was a good school because I could see the works every season, and I could start to learn. And of course, after that, I was kind of like invited by my father to go to the winemaking school, of course.
Because what does that mean, invited? Like how?
Invited because actually, you know, when you grow up working and a little bit forced because a kid doesn't want to work. I mean, when I was 12, 15, to do like my couple of hours a day of work was something I didn't want to do. I preferred to play or to do something else, of course. But and so in my idea I was looking for doing something else. I was having the will of leaving maybe and doing my own way. And so I was thinking like for example, I remember I was feeling like I was interested in cooking. I want to do like maybe the cooking school. I had friends that were in restaurants, and so I was telling my father, I don't want to do this. I want to go in school, in a school for cooking. And my father, I remember once we were driving in Alba in front of the winemaking school, and he said, do you see that place? That old house? And said, that's the place you're going to go to study. And so I was like, I have
that
no
doesn't
choice.
Look like the restaurant.
So I had to forget about that. And actually, I went to this school. And of course, it was the right decision because actually I have this great opportunity to have this beautiful soil in Barbaresco, and would be really kind of a waste not working with these grapes. And so now I'm happy that I made this decision, even if it was a little bit forced, of course.
How did the family get a hold of those vineyards, and when did that happen? What's the history of the actual holdings?
I'm saying that it's four generations that we are in Barbaresco, and in specific we are on the hill of Ovello, which is very close to the center of the town. It is an old farm that was on the map of the region already in the 1800s. So it was one of the first houses in Barbaresco. It's very, very old. And actually, we go back at the end of 1800s when my great-grandfather, Giuseppe Vacca, that was also with a strong idea of cooperation because was also involved in the first cooperative Produttori del Barbaresco that started in 86 or 89 was the first cooperative that was led by Domizio Cavazza. Domizio Cavazza was an agronomist coming in Piemonte from Emilia-Romagna to teach growers to fight the phylloxera problem with teaching the grafting and actually also learning more about mildew, the white mildew, the use of the copper. And so started kind of like schools for these growers that became in 1882 the winemaking school of Alba, where actually I've been going in like 100 years later. So this guy happens that he found this house in Barbaresco. It was like a richer family that purchased the castle of Barbaresco. And then he had the chance to buy some land. And so his first land he bought was the house where I'm still living with the property around. So the same vineyards I'm owning now. Plus another estate in Pora, another beautiful site in Barbaresco. Then after some years, he started his project of the cooperative project. And so a few families, including my great-grandfather, they were involved in that. Years later, after 20 years of cooperative, things, they were changing, and problems with the First War, and Domizio Cavazza had some problems, actually passed away. And my father, my great-grandfather, had the opportunity to buy this estate from his family. So this is the beginning of the this is the start of our family being in this house where, that is now called Cantina del Pino. The Pino is a pine tree. So Cantina del Pino, I am using this as a logo because it's planted in top of the property where the house is a 150 years old pine tree that Domizio Cavazza planted when his first son was born.
You went to winemaking school in Alba.
Yes.
And what was that experience like?
Of course, at the beginning, as I said, I didn't like that much, so I was not a great student. But then I ended up being more involved and more interested, of course, in the wine. Because beside that, I was also working in the vineyards, and I was also trying to do some vinification myself with some Dolcetto, with some Barbera, to experiment things that we were learning in school. And my father, of course, like every farmer, was making some wine in his own property to have some wine to drink every day, because wine was not only something to sell, it was something to consume as food for us. No, my father was drinking every day quite a bit of wine, and so it was part of the diet of every farmer and worker, of course.
After school, you went to work in the produttori, in the cooperative.
Yeah, after a few years, a couple of years, I went to work at produttori, to work in the doing a harvest, and then working full-time to do with the local winemaker, like a helper winemaker. And so I did like 6 years there, trying every kind of side of the work that is in a winery. Of course, mainly from vinifications, some lab, and some selling wines, and doing deliveries, some taking care of shipments. So I believe a good experience for me.
And what did you learn during that period of time? What really stood out for you about how the cooperative makes wine?
For me, like still now, the most exciting time of the year is the harvest time, of course, like for every winemaker. It's the time that you can work almost 24 hours a day and you don't feel tired because the energy is very, very high. The excitement about the new harvest is big, and the wine is made in this time. So I remember very well the fermentations, the time, the selection of the grapes at the crusher machine. The visit we were doing before the harvest, you know, in each vineyard to understand well the time of picking and it was the right time to start. So all things that were really exciting and they were really a learning experience, focused very much about the Nebbiolo grapes, because we have to remember Produttore de Barbaresco, they only crush Nebbiolo grapes, and so it was very, very focused.
You convinced your dad when you were working together in the vineyard that perhaps leaving the cooperative would be the best move for the family. And what did you tell him?
Actually, to say it didn't happen very, very quickly, because actually these they were discussions we have been doing, I believe, for years, because the beginning was not positive about that for sure, but I understood. So I kind of like worked a little bit slower, spending the time in the vineyards, because I spent a lot of time in the vineyards. Each one we had a row doing any kind of work, because the work in the vineyards there is like very long, and so we spend a lot of hours. And so in the meantime, we discuss about what we should do in the vineyard, what we should do to make a better grape. And so I started to tell him, what about if we start to make our own wine? What about? Because actually, we were making some Dolcetto and some Barbera, because already we had some of these two grapes. And so I had some little tanks. But of course, I didn't have all the equipment. First of all, it's a big investment, and so it's something you can't do in once, and so you have to do little by little. But overall, it was a matter of leaving the cooperative, something that my father was investing into this for all his life, and so it was very difficult for him to take the decision. But actually, I would say that Adriano, my father, has been He's an old man now. He's 76, but I have seen in him something that is like more modern in his way. I mean, he's open-minded, and so I respect this very much. And we became good partners now, and so he really allowed me to start this project without really giving me too much obstacles, no. I could see some friends having fathers thinking more in the old way, but not being open and having a lot of conflict of generation within. So, of course, there is always a little conflict in generations, but actually I was lucky because actually he let me do, and we started to collaborate in this project. It is like still now working. More in the vineyard sides. My father doesn't like to work in the winery, and so the winery is something that is new, is mine, in project, but he's like my vineyard manager. You know, every single vine, and I learned so much, and still learning from him, and adding knowledges that are still helping me in making the wine I want to make. And this is like a very important key. Beside adding my knowledges, and so we are always discussing together the way to work in the vineyards to increase the quality of the grapes, because we both now believe that that's the way, that there is the place where we play the game to making the good Barbaresco. More and more it is the vineyards, and the winery is always something that happens after. It is less relevant than what we do in the vineyards.
Why was it important to you to leave the cooperative? What was it that you really wanted to achieve by leaving?
Probably it is a desire that was growing year after year, doing vinification at Produttori and doing large vinification at Produttori, having different parcels blended together. And at the same time, I was working in the vineyards with my father. And so I was focusing in doing what I think is the best to make a better wine, but not seeing really the result for the work I did in that single specific vineyard, because everything we do, every leaf we remove or we leave, we decide maybe to work the soil or not to work the soil, to spray once more the copper or not. And so when we do this, I'm always thinking at the wine that is in the glass. And like, will this be something that increases the quality or not? And so like, how can I do this if I don't make my own vinification? And so I would really... I decided this because the desire to see this result of the work in the vineyard was strong, and this was the only way. Beside that, of course, the pleasure of making our own wine, to have my own label, and it's like a personal satisfaction. And so I believe it's a little bit of ego that brings you to do this.
Did it cause any rifts in your own family? Because Aldo Vaca, who's the sort of general manager of the cooperative, is also your cousin. So were there any discussions that had to go on to make that a smooth transition?
No, I think everything was quite smooth. It's not nice. I mean, I want to say the members of the cooperative, they are not very happy when someone is leaving, especially if you have good vineyards. They are losing a little bit of a piece of the soil or the land. But they understood, of course. They didn't leave any other producer after they left me in 1997. So still, the cooperative, there are more people they want to get in than people they want to get out, because they do a very good job. And so we are good friends with them, with my cousin. We are cousin and friends. And so I believe there is always a good collaboration, because honestly, I have to say that when I talk about Barbaresco, when I talk about Cantina del Pino and I travel to show the wines, I'm always talking about the town, the wine, the designated name of Barbaresco, and speaking always very highly about the cooperative where I used to be a member, and there my father founded because I believe they make great wines.
And was that a change for you to travel to different markets? I mean, Barbaresco is a fairly small town. You grew up there. Did you get a chance to do much traveling before you left to sell the wines?
No, I grew up in Barbaresco. I lived in Barbaresco, and first 25 years, even more, they were spent within Barbaresco and Alba, which is like 10 kilometers. And so it's like I didn't really travel at all. But I had this strong feeling like I want to see the world. I want to see outside of here because, of course, I want to know more about what's the world like. And of course, doing this work was also fascinating, and starting this project fascinating because maybe I could have the chance to propose my wine in different parts of the world and showing the work I do. And so having the opportunity to see places, to travel, and this is like a great part of my job that I feel very lucky I have, because allows me to see different cities in the world and knowing people. And I believe since I have this work and since I'm traveling to promote my wine, and I know if I have to count all the person I know now around the world, it would be like exponentially they increased, because before I only knew the people around my town. So this is a very exciting way to enjoy life too.
What are the holdings that you have at the winery? What vineyards do you work?
All the estate is in Ovello. Ovello is like a large hill and one of the single vineyard, but it's not really a single vineyard because it's more about areas in Barbaresco, designated areas. And it's one of the official sites that also is made by other producers. Like, of course, we were making, Produttore del Barbaresco is making a Ovello. So when I started the vinification, I had this beautiful vineyard, this different section of this Ovello. And I started to make my Ovello from these vines that have been planted 70, 75 years ago. So we have old vines, also for Dolcetto, for Barbera, which is a smaller amount. But we have vines that are as old as from 50 to 70. And so that was also a good way to start, because it's important. This is an important key to make wines for aging. During the following years, I had the chance, not that I was really looking for increasing my small production, but I had the chance, the opportunity to purchase a few vineyards, to lease one of them, but only very nice vineyards that I was really looking forward to do as a single vinification, to see the different expression of a Nebbiolo in a different side. So what I added to the property is not Barbera or Dolcetto, but Nebbiolo only. And that was in the Gallina vineyard, in the Starderi vineyard, and the Albesani vineyard. Three different soils, different Ovello, that they express a different terroir. So for me, that was very exciting, because Nebbiolo, it's all about that. And so it is something that I see already from the beginning of the fermentations in the vineyards, different bouquet, different aromas, and so makes the Nebbiolo a very, very interesting grape to vinify.
And what did you see as the differences between those crews?
They are the three vineyards I just mentioned. They are in the village of Neive. Generally speaking, these vineyards, they are a little bit lower in elevation than what Ovello is. And they are kind of more protected from the valley where the river flows, which is very, very close to the Ovello hill. That is a little bit higher in elevation. This is one of the things that makes the climate a bit different. The valley and the river, they bring a little bit more fog on the Ovello hill, and so cooler temperature during the September-October time, and so more drop of temperature overnight also for that part of the vineyard we own. When, for example, the Albesani, which is another single vineyard I make and I bottle separate, it's a bit more protected, south exposed, very also very traditional and old vineyard that is a bit warm, and doesn't get too much the effect of the fog because a bit more protected by the Ovello Hill, which is just on the side, and shows in the soil a little bit more clay than what we get in the Ovello, which is a marn with a lot of calcium and a touch of more sand. As a result, I'm talking about these two vineyards because they are the single vineyards I'm making. The Ovello shows a bit more of finesse, brighter tones, more acidity, like higher tones than what we get in the Albezzani, where the fruit is touch of more darker, almost more kind of a black fruit, more powerful. Right now, a little shorter because the minerality we get in the Ovello is very, very long. When in the Albezzani, we get more the power. So I like to have these two vineyards because they are quite different. And then display this difference pretty much consistently year after year, reflecting very much the vintage too, of course. Because first of all, it is the vintage, the shape, up the character of the wine. But always they have... I'm learning now, because it's not many years that I have the Albezzani, I'm learning that these differences, they are shown consistently year after year. So I see people liking more wine style or more the other. I believe to have these very clear and very expressed, and now it's what I'm doing and trying to do, it to be more focused on this, is to have a winemaking that is less crafting the wine, is less technology, is less... is like very, very gentle in order like to have these qualities very well expressed. So that means that the wines, they go through a long maceration, they are just destemmed, they spend the same time in oak, and they are not fined, they are not filtered. There's nothing else than a pump moving the wine at the right time when most of the times the wine is moved by gravity. So very gentle way to let express well the soils. I see the more we act in the wineries, the more they get closer. Or if I do a fining, I reduce the tannin, maybe of the Albezzani, which is displays stronger tannins, and it becomes a little smoother when it's younger. So maybe better, I don't know, but actually it's not Albezzani anymore. It gets closer to the Ovello. So I prefer to leave everything like it is from the vineyards. In this way, it's more about vintage and soils.
Because the élevage is the same.
The élevage is the same. What I'm trying to do, and what I've been doing since many years now, it is meticulously everything is the same. I also bottled these two vineyards the same day. They are small parcels, so I can handle that. In order really that I and for myself too, when I taste the wines, I don't think like, oh, maybe it was... that fining or this filtration or the other work I did in the vineyards. No, I'm trying to do everything the same in order really to let express at the best this quality.
How long is that maceration on the skins?
It is for about 4 weeks.
And then you pump over?
Pump over. We push down the cap at the beginning once a day, but... Then we do that a little bit like every 2 days and then less and less. So at the beginning, the fermentation is a bit more dynamic and then is less.
So you push it down by hand or with...
Yeah, the small tanks, yes. In the larger tanks, it would be like a piston we managed to build to do that. Otherwise, it would be very difficult.
And what about the aging in terms of wood?
Yeah, in terms of wood, so I would say that that kind of maceration is very, very classic. It's what I learned to do at Produttori. Another thing I can do, which is like more an outside control we do, is like the temperature. I don't let the temperature to go too high in order to have wines that they are not over-extracted, they don't lose their finesse. They come from the vineyards, because I would say Barbaresco, it is a lot about finesse. The wines after this maceration, they go in oak and they go in a small French cask, which is less modern, with less traditional in a way, for 1 year. And then after the second year of aging, they go in larger cask for the second year of aging. This slows down a little bit the aging. And after that, in the bottle. Then the wine is bottled and ages in the bottle for 1 to sometimes 3 years. I'm releasing the 2008 only now. So when the wine, I see that the wine is ready.
You know, the Pot de Troyes doesn't tend to age in that small French oak. Where did you decide to do that? Why make that decision?
But I found that I want to have the wines less moved possible. I don't want to expose the wine to the oxygen too much at the same time. And so when every time we do a racking, we give a lot of, we move the wine from tank to tank, we give more oxygen to the wine. After the fermentation, wine goes in small barrels and they don't need to be moved for 1 year at least. There's no reduction because in a small cask, there's a good transpiration. It gives the good oxygen that allows the wine to stay clean, don't get reductions. So after that, I want to slow down because actually I believe I want to reduce this release of oxygen. And so large cask allows me to do with a bigger volume of wine in a large cask, there is a slow release of oxygen too. So the maturation slows down a little bit. So one racking in 2 years, this is like something I really like to do. I do that by gravity. I have two levels now. I mean, finally now I have a winery. It took a while before to have all the space I need. And another aspect is like I have small parcels. I have... I'm very interested in do different vinifications and to do single vinification on every parcel. So right now in the winery 2013, I have six different Barbarescos. I don't make six different bottlings, but I can taste, at least for the first year, the evolution in every single wine and to see the character of the terroir. And so the small barrels, I don't use a lot, I mean, it's a little amount of new oak, so I'm pretty neutral. Allows me to be able to taste this and to keep them separate.
So even though later you blend the Stradiri and the Galena and a bit of the Ovello into the traditional Barbaresco Normale bottling, you keep them different until they're blended together.
Exactly. Actually, I do that for the first year because doing the second year in large cask, of course... I have to start to blend in the second year. But the first year, after 1 year, is the time I start to understand better a vintage, and so gives me a lot of clues about that vineyard, about the way it evolves. And so, yes, also for the Barbaresco Tradizionale, I have these four single vineyards that they are vinified all separate. So all the Stradiri, all the Galena, one of the section of the Ovello, which is the southeast 65 years old vines called Albano, which is a beautiful vineyard, and plus always a little bit of Stradiri, and this to give all complexity to the wine. And always I can see a very good consistency year after year because we go from plenty south to southeast, so different exposure that they balance each other every year. So I like this concept.
So there's actually different parcels of the Ovello.
Yeah, they are Ovello. It is a larger hill. It is very close to the town. When we drive towards Barbaresco, when we reach the top of the hill, this is the top of the Barbaresco, of the Ovello hill, and it's where we have the house. So it is as different facing. There is a narrow little top, which is actually our property. Is also known as Brick Mentina, which is plenty south. And then it turns to the west, a little bit to west, and that's called Loreto. So these two sections, they are the same soil. The soil is similar, it's contiguous. That would be the Ovello single vineyard they make. Very old, beautiful, with vines that they give consistently very good grapes. But there is also a south... west, because it's almost like a triangle, this hill. And that section, there is a touch of more clay in the soil. When I work the soil, I see some reddish strip, some different... and so also there's a this place, a similar character to the Ovello, but with more earthiness, with more... almost getting closer to the Neve style of Barbaresco. And this is a single vinification. And then, of course, the other three vineyards, they are vinified separately. And then they will be blended, of course, to make the traditional Barbaresco, when the Ovello and the Stardere, which is a beautiful south, also know is the same hill known also as also like a Santo Stefano hill. So historically, a very good vineyard. Is also bought at the, as a single vineyard, but not all. Only a small part, one part. I make 2,000 bottles of that, really just to have a wine to display and to have as a single vineyard, because I believe single vineyards, they are great expression and a great help for us to show how Nebbiolo is sensitive to the soil. So when I do a tasting, I have two different vineyards like this side by side, that plus they are made by the same producers. It's a very good statement that tells how Nebbiolo is sensitive to the soil. It's exactly made the same way, but expressed to different soils. So that's why it's planted there. That's why Barbaresco, that's why Barolo, that's why Nebbiolo is not everywhere in the world. But overall, the idea of blending together different soils, like I do in the Tradizionale Barbaresco, I believe it's a more than traditional, it is also something I personally like. Because sometimes I say that if I really had to make a wine, a Barbaresco to drink myself, I would be super selective in every vineyard and I would blend them to have more complexity.
Which in a way is not something so many producers do today. You don't see so many blended Barolo or Barbaresco. I mean, there's the Torre bottling of Podatori, and there's Barolo Mascarello in Barolo, yeah. But you don't see so many blended from different soils that are offered as the top wine of the estate, at least.
Yeah, you're right. Because actually, I see that the concept what I call tradizionale sometimes is called like base, which is like more kind of an entry level Barolo or Barbaresco. And I don't think there are entry level Barolo and Barbaresco. For what I'm trying to do in my estate is like, we have to be selective. Not all the Barbaresco and Barolo that is designated Barbaresco and Barolo vineyards, they might be a perfect wine for aging 20 plus and 30 plus years. But we have Nebbiolo Langhe. Nebbiolo Langhe is a perfect wine to be selective in that vineyards, to make a wine maybe with shorter maceration, maybe not aging oak like that, or maybe in stainless steel. That is what I'm doing, to give a wine expressive with the grape, to give a Nebbiolo that expresses the Nebbiolo in his youth, in his fresh and fruity expression. And it is a delicious wine to drink and to pair with many different food, different kind of food, I would say.
So what about the differences between Gallina and Stardere?
Gallina and Stardere, they are, I find the two wines expressing different character again, because Gallina is very close to the Barbaresco area, to the Ovello Hill, and I see Gallina expressing more lightness and finesse, what I find more in the Barbaresco area. When Stardere, definitely, it is a wine that expresses more power, more dark fruit. I can see an exceptionally depth in the fruit in the Stardere, with almost a black kind of fruit, very intense and sweet, which is very exciting. Already from the vinification, I see during the fermentation different colors coming from the Gallina, which is lighter, a little bit brighter, and very deep in Stardere. This is probably for a level of clay that is more in that side. It's a beautiful, completely south side. And so a more muscular character in the Stardere. It tends to be, sometimes I say, a bit more Barbera-like almost. And so this fruit has more intense tones. In the Gallina, I find a little bit more refined tannins, a little bit more complex bouquet, more floral in a way, more like it's shown in the Ovello, but with tannins a little silkier than what we get in the Ovello, that is like as tannins that they are in a way a little sharper.
So you planted the Stardieri and the Galena. They weren't vines that were already there when you took up the lease. And how did you plant them?
Basically, what I'm doing, I'm planting different clones and trying to repeat what has been done many years ago in the old vineyards we have, which was like a massal selection of different plants taken from the best vines around our property or other properties of neighborhoods. And planted, so always a mix of clone. I believe it's not good to have a vineyard that is only one clone on a Nebbiolo, because there are 14 different clones on a Nebbiolo, and they can be very different one from the other. So we can characterize the wine too much with a clone. And so I always plant like 4 or 5 different clones every other row in order to have it a little bit spread around in the vineyard. And so I choose some clones that have been selected, they've been vinified like with micro vinification. The University of Torino has been doing a great job, and my close friend Nicola Argamante has been involved in this selection, and so I was lucky to be in contact with him. And so every time I had to do some work in these vineyards and to select a grape and a clone, he was coming and explaining me the different clones and the different expression they have been showing in the micro vinification they have been doing at the university. So the suggestions was always to blend different clones, from some that they are more powerful, they display probably the character or more the dark colors and richer fruit, like the 146, for example, to some other that they have smaller berries and they have good concentration, like the 71, the 72, and mixed with some like the 111, which is known as also apparently is the rosé, so the one with less color but great finesse. So it's always like trying to repeat what was a classic old vineyard. And so Nebbiolo is not only one grape, there are many grapes, like Pinot Noir, are many different clones. And so we have to pay attention to this. And so I planted these three vineyards with a mix of clone. So in this way, probably is the best way to see then the terroir. Otherwise, it would be too much thinking about, maybe it's the clone. And so that's what's important. I believe it's important to do. Of course, then the more the new vineyard on Nebbiolo they age, and the more consistency in quality, of course, because they can stand better extreme weathers. Doesn't mean that the young vines, like 5, 6, 7 years, they can give a good Barbaresco or Barolo. They can, but the vintage has to be, the climate has to be perfect and has to have these vines growing well, not too vigorous, not too stressed, to reach a perfect maturation. Because it's a matter of bringing of leading the vineyards to reach the right amount of stress to give the best grapes. A vine when is in that window, in that kind of light stress, is giving the best, is not growing too much new leaves, is stopping the vegetation more, you know, at the beginning of August and starting to ripe well, having smaller berries, bigger skins. And this is the main work we were talking about for making good wines. We have to do this in the vineyards. So since I'm taking care of the estate of the family, I was trying to lead the vineyards in this phase. Old vineyards, they are naturally in this phase. Young vineyards, very attentive about the fertilization. It's 20 years we don't do any fertilization, otherwise it would be too vigorous. Nebbiolo, it is a vigorous grape. And so in this way, found this balance sooner. And so we can have better quality sooner and to vinify this grape as Barbaresco sooner. Before, these grapes, they're perfect to make wine with more fruit, maybe less depth, which is Nebbiolo Lange, for example.
And has the area gotten warmer and drier?
We have vintages that they are warmer. We have probably more vintages that they are warmer now than what we had in the past. But we had 2013, we had 2010, and they were not. And so still, some of the classic vintage, they are back. Nebbiolo is reacting well to those vintages.
And what is the fruit of Nebbiolo? What does Nebbiolo taste like?
Nebbiolo is like sometimes is a wine that is difficult to have him it expressing very well because he's a little shy, a little tight, and needs always a little bit of time to express his fruit. His fruit often it's a little hided, and with the oxygen is opening up with some little fruits like red fruit, like cherries, little berries, when he's young. But also when he's young, I see my vinification of the Nebbiolo Langa, we get some of the spice. So some of the pepper, some of the white pepper, some of the dried herbs and species like thyme. And these are growing more and more once the wine, of course, after being properly aged in oak, it's aging in the bottle. And so this character of spice, they take higher tones when the fruit is less upfront and the wine displays at the palate more minerality, more complexity, more length. And that's the time once I see the Nebbiolo expressing itself at the best, because when he's young, he's more fruit-driven. And it is interesting because still has minerality, but the more it ages in the bottle, and the more express a greater complexity, and more the length, and more the character of the soil, and the character of that specific vineyards. So I'm always pleased when I have the chance to open a Barolo, a Barbaresco, once they get 10 years. I would say 10 years of aging is starts to really show what we want to see in those wines. So more like dried flowers than fresh flowers, and a spice that has more layers, and revealing these more layers once they open the glass. And I believe from that, we see that character. And so from that on, the wine starts to show a more noble character of the grape, of course. So often these wines, we drink it too young, but between the 10, 15 years, I see it's a beautiful window to get already the wine that probably we can call Barolo or Barbaresco. When they are younger, it's almost like a work in progress on that. But overall, I would say that when I really like a wine and I really believe in the good grapes we have been using to make this wine, I can enjoy the wine young too, of course. It's not as complex as it could be, but I can see that wine would be more complex. I'm just drinking a little bit younger. And so it's more a bit, sometimes it's like a matter of pairing the wine a little bit better. But of course, once it's more than 20 years that we age this wine well in a cellar, we get really this wine starting to show what it's all about, Nebbiolo. So more complexity.
Did you find that racking the wine less brought a different quality to the fruit of the Nebbiolo?
But I'm always thinking that we have to be very attentive to make wines that they are good, of course. They are drinkable also when they are young. But I believe my first goal before that is to give wines that they have a great ageability. And so the contact with the oxygen has to be wise, has to be the wines, Nebbiolo can be sensitive to the oxygen. And so we have to dose this, and so to reduce this impact and to keep the wine clean, but to bottle the wine a little bit protected, because even if it's a little bit tight when it's young, we have the responsibility. I mean, we have the responsibility to have these wines aging very long. So this is my first goal. And so less use of oxygen gives to the wine better chances to age better.
Does it affect the actual texture and the kind of fruit that you get too, or no?
In a way, it keeps this fruit aging slower, because the process of aging overall is oxygenation. And so I like to have the fruit that ripes, but in a slow way. I prefer to have the wine a little fresh or maybe a little difficult when it's just released, but that is more resistant to the air. Even the third day I open a bottle, and so this is always a good sign for drinking a wine after many years and to be so happy. Because I see that the best satisfaction we can have from a wine we think is a great wine is when it's very, very old and still has a long way to go. And so these are always a great experience when we can open a bottle like that.
Would you go so far as to say that you're trying to work reductively with the Nebbiolo?
Yeah, I'm trying to work with the Nebbiolo, not really reductively, but actually to keep the wine in the right path in order to don't exceed and to have the wine too open, because it could be risky. Of course, I always say that I'm learning year after year, and this is like a never-ending story, this one of learning about winemaking. We have only one chance every year, of course, and so I'm adjusting a little bit the things without changing drastically my style or what I'm doing, with this idea in my mind. So to keep the wine a little bit on the reductive side when it's aging in the cask, and in this way we can also reach another goal, which is very important for me too, is like the use of lower level of sulfites. And so in these wines, sometimes I'm surprised how low it is, like 40 ppm. I had just had some analysis of the wine, which is a level that after 6 months, 1 year in the bottle, there's not even free sulfites. And so it's like very, very clean wines. And so, this is the only thing I add in the wine, because my wines, they don't see anything added to them. The acidity that comes from the vineyard is the acidity that it has its life in the wine. So I don't touch this balance. I don't move it. I have to do all right in the vineyards to pick at the right time to have what I need to have a wine aging well. If I have to correct something in the wine, if I had to add something, I believe is always correcting some mistakes that is coming from the vineyards. I like to play easy. I like to say, I'm not a good winemaker. I need great grapes to make a great wine, because otherwise I don't know what to do with that. And so it's all the game is played in the vineyards and in the right time of picking. I'm learning, but actually I learned from difficult vintages. When I started was a difficult vintage, and so I made good wines. The first one I made, they are not aging like I want. And so, of course, we do mistakes and then we learn.
So you felt 97 was a difficult year?
It was warm. It was beautiful. It was difficult in a way, because I was so excited to have this beautiful ripe fruit with low yields, because 12 low yields was already a goal I had from the beginning. And that's an easy thing to do, you think, the crop. But it's not all about that. I was thinking it was all about that, but it's not. And actually, the acidity we picked, probably they were a little bit lower. And so the wine was doing very well, was already very showing very well. I believe now is a wine we have to drink now. And so I would like the 97 to age longer than what it is. And so I believe we have to work better in the managing the canopy in that years. Of course, it was an extreme vintage. And to pick to have the maturation of the phenolic maturation reaching their peak and still having the acidity. This is the tricky thing of the warm vintages. So I would say, to give an example, I'm very happy with my 2003, which is not the best vintage, probably.
You felt like by the time you got to 03, you learned from what happened.
I learned from that, 97, for example. And so 2093, now they are young, they are fresh, they are aging
03.
Very well.
03.
I'm sorry, the 03. I'm already mistaking.
No,
10 years at the time.
Because that'd be awesome if your 03 tasted like a 93. That would be amazing.
I didn't make a 93, but actually my goal is that. I mean, keeping aside bottles and to reach then that aging, having bottled, they age that long and they are delicious. And so I don't know. I have to wait, but I'm working in that direction.
And what about some of the other vintages that have occurred over your career in terms of making your own wine?
We are lucky because, as you know, we had good vintages in the last more than 10 years, actually. We have good vintages. They are different, though, one from the other, because every couple of years we have a warm vintage, warmer. I believe, like I did, other wineries, they really learn very well from these extremely high, warmer vintages. And so everyone is doing better to manage these vintages. And so pretty consistently we have good wines, but with different styles, of course, because the warm vintage affects the Nebbiolo in a different way than a cool vintage. So, of course, we never expect the same wine in Barbaresco like in Barolo. It's very much about vintage. So the one of the difficult vintages, besides, for example, 97, or I mean, for me, 97 was difficult. Probably for other producer, experience was not. But I'm talking for my experience, my first experience. The 93 was also a little bit challenging. Another vintage was quite one of the last bad vintages was 2002, for example. 2002 was also an expression of the opposite thing. So rain. We didn't have any hail like in Barolo, but actually we had a lot of rain through all the summer. So old vines, managing the hills very, very severely, helped me to reach a small crop. And helped by the weather, we had in late September, beginning of October, I made a Novello 2002 when many labels were not produced in that vintage. That's an extreme vintage, just to give an example, that I'm proud of, because actually this wine is an excellent wine in a difficult vintage. And so it was a matter of working well in the vineyards and having old vines that they were giving this great consistency with deep roots and not suffering too much the extreme level of water we had. So this is a vintage a little bit more extreme that I'm proud of. After that, we had great vintages like 2004. 2004, it's a better vintage, of course, but easy. And so I like more the 4 than the 2, but the 2 is more my baby, because actually the 4, they are a very high standard quality. And so when we buy a 4, it's never a risk. We will have a good, I would say, a good quality from all the region. And so it's a memorable vintage, of course, that is showing very well now. And after this, pretty much every vintage was pretty solid with different expression. The 5 was great. We were doing some tastings. So the 5 just recently this trip, and it's showing still very young, very intense, powerful. I'm talking about the 5. When 6 is another vintage that needs more time, still very young, in a way similar to the 96 that was very sharp at the beginning, but now starting to round up these tannins and getting a little silkier. 7, 2007, a warmer vintage forward. We were tasting also this recently, like still young, fresh, but with sweet tannins, more alcohol and more glycerin makes the wine smoother, and with this fruit ripe, very appealing, and a bit easier in a way. And then we had the we are now on the 2008, that is a fabulous vintage, still a little bit young, of course, full, rich, strong tannins. That's why also we just released it, because it needs time in the bottle. And the other vintages, like 10, 11, 12, 13, they are all good vintages. They are still aging, and they will be soon, some of them, on the market. But I am very excited about, because I believe all these last vintages, they are a very good expression on Nebbiolo, and they will be very interesting.
Are there vintages where, being conflated in the customer mind with Barolo is somewhat difficult for the understanding of the vintage. I mean, when you describe 05 as a powerful wine, I find a lot of Barbarescos in 05 to be more powerful, but then some of the, in the context of Barbaresco, but then some of the Barolos seem quite light. And it seems to have to do with when the rains came in 05 and when people picked, in terms of Barbaresco being a little riper, a little earlier.
Yeah, exactly. It was a matter of this rain that was starting and going on for a week. And so Barbaresco being always more or less 1 week ahead in maturation than Nebbiolo. When this rain started, all Barbaresco was already picked. Some of the Barolo was already picked, and so we can have Barolo pre and after this rain. And so, of course, some dilution in the after this rain. And this made the difference in weight, in structure, in the wines. But so few Barolos, they were already picked too. I believe probably 50%. So, of course, the weather. We are so much exposed to the... at the weather with the Nebbiolo grapes, because ripes later, and when Dolcetto is it's an easier game because it ripes 1 month earlier, and pretty much the maturation is very, very consistent.
Are there other vintages where you feel that the vintage was different for Barbaresco than for Barolo in a significant way?
Recently, apparently I didn't taste too many 2009 Barolo, but I heard and I found that the 2009 in Barolo, they are expressing very well and very, very good concentration, when in general they tend to be that Barbaresco is a little bit weaker or in a way overripe because it was warm. So might be that a vintage that I can see some gap between the two. I'm happy with what I did in the 9. Because it's the wine I'm tasting in these days that I'm visiting clients, and actually tastes like almost like a fresher vintage. I don't know, but actually I pick the acidity is fresh, and so it would be more about from producer and producer.
So a lot of people would have released in Barbaresco. A lot of people would have released their 2010 by now. It would be in the market, but you've held on to it, and you've only recently released the 8, which is, you know, a fairly long time of élevage in terms of maturation in the bottle. Do you feel that that helps the appreciation of the wines in the market? Do you feel that your part of the success is giving it that extra time, or what's your approach on that?
But my approach is like, I mean, in this case, I decided exceptionally to do the 8 after the 9. Because I found the 9 with a very good balance, tannins that they were rounder in a way. It is fresh and expressing a young character, but in a nice balance. So I can enjoy the wine already now. When the 8, they were a bit more aggressive, tannins with more grip, and still out of balance. So it was really the vintage that I thought probably just... switch, and I do that before because they're just not ready. And so the risk is like I will be showing the wine like I did in the past with other vintages, example 2006, that they were not just they were not understood, and it was hard to me to explain the wine and to tell them like it's a matter of time, but this wine will be great. And so it was kind of challenging because it's a bit confusing for a small winer like mine to change the order of release. But now that we are showing the 8, this is working well. People, they get something with more earthiness, more complexity, and more spice, and they tend to like that.
Especially much. Restaurants where they're probably sold out of some of their 8s, and now they get to restock on some 8s. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, everything is running very quick, and the vintages, they... come in, they are very young, so already the 10 on the market, but I don't believe the 10, they are ready. And so sometimes it's matter to decant and to treat well the wine, and so I will enjoy the 10 also now, but I'm sure that the 10, they will be way better in 6 years. So I'm trying to hold the wine a little longer. I was doing this already before, probably with my work at Produttori, I was a little bit following this way to do, because that's what they do. They always release a little bit late. And I realized the time in the bottle, once you have solid wine, even if I didn't do a fining to make the wine a little bit more ready, in long term, this is paying off well, because you get more the richness of the wine. It's only a matter to have the tannins to soft down a little bit, to have to tone down a little bit to get more in balance. But then the wine is more intriguing, is more true, is more Nebbiolo-like. I like Nebbiolo, I love Nebbiolo, I like to taste the Nebbiolo. I don't want to taste a smooth Nebbiolo with no tannins. Nebbiolo has tannin, and they have to be the tannins that come from that vineyard, from that vintage. So for me, it is intriguing. Even if sometimes it's a little bit more harsh or difficult, as long as it was very good grape, I'm happy with the wine. It's just a matter of time. If the grape or the Nebbiolo were not ripe well, that's not a good wine. That's a wine will never ripe well, will never be in balance. And I tasted very, very old vintages. They still have green tannins. But this was green tannins coming from grapes not perfectly ripe.
And what about 10? I mean, what did you think about it? You said it's going to need some more time. What was your experience of 10?
10, I'm very looking forward to retaste my 10, because actually, hopefully, I will go back in Italy to the Vinitaly Fair, where I'll be showing the 10 for the first time and retaste with my clients and to see the way they are showing now. But for what I think, it would be still a matter of a few years, because they are still tight. They are a little bit not really showy. And so I see the wine needing more air and opening. They need time to open up. And so that means they need time also in the bottle. I find the 10 a very interesting vintage, because it was cooler, later harvest. We managed to have very low yields, beautiful grapes. Alcohol was balanced. It is 14 degrees only, when, of course, Nebbiolo tends to have a lot of sugar, sometimes to go up to 14.5 and more. And so it's a very good level of alcohol to have an elegant wine. And this late maturation of the Nebbiolo was bringing a great aromatic. And so following the wine aging in the cask, I was very, very excited. And then I could see after the bottling, this wine closing down a little bit. So now it's kind of going into a phase that is like not exactly expressive like as I remember. But I'm quite sure this will be back. We'll show it. All this finesse and elegance later. And so I'm very confident. I'm only worried about one thing, that will be difficult to explain this. But I'm sure in a few years, this will be very clear. It is a very elegant vintage with a great finesse and expressing a true character of Barbaresco.
And what about the vintage that just finished, the 2013, in terms of harvest?
That's another vintage that, for me, it's again a new experience, because it is different than any other I did. The maturation of the grapes came very late. We had to wait longer. Climate was cool. So positive. I like this kind of climate for Nebbiolo. Very well overall, and so the maturation, the phenolic maturation, was very complete. So we have very nice colors, and tannins, they are very balanced and kind of sweet and not very grippy, and so they are not aggressive already now. It's kind of a perfect balance that I almost never seen, with good acidity, good freshness. So I see all the elements in the 2013 to be a vintage, delicious, even young, but with a great potential also for aging. So I'm really looking forward to see the evolution of the 13. And honestly, I have to say that for me to understand very well, it takes me 1 year. I mean, 1 year to taste the wine after some time in the cask, when they start to clean up a little bit and to show the fruit and to soften the tannins a little bit. But at the same time, I always have the memory of what the grapes were like and what with the growing season was that year. And so I was very happy about all these things. And so it would be a smaller crop, but for sure high quality for 2013.
And what about some of the other grape varieties you grow? I've seen a Freisia bottling from you, not very frequently, but I've seen it. You make Dolcetto, you make Barbera. What would you say about some of those?
Yeah, my family has been planting different grapes in the property. So what I had to the property, they were those three Vigna di Neve, that is Nebbiolo. So apparently if I add something to the property, it is Nebbiolo, because this is my interest and my favorite grape, of course. My family, like every winery or every farm in the old days, they were planting a little bit of different grape, classic grape of the region. Some Nebbiolo, some Dolcetto, some Barbera, exceptionally some Freisia, but all autochthon grape of the region, to have always on the market some grapes to sell. And being more online with the different price of the grapes. And so sometimes the Dolcetto was paid well, sometimes the Nebbiolo was getting the better price. And so, I mean, a mix of the different grapes was a classic thing to have. And so as a result, these all the wineries, they always have a Barbaresco, a Barbera, a Dolcetto, eventually some other. Mainly reds, of course. The whites is something new for Barbaresco area. And so we have a small vineyard of Freisia. We vinify like a more fresher in style and a little sparkly with a second fermentation in vat. And so like a summer wine. My grandfather planted that because he was also doing some re-fermentation, the same re-fermentation in the bottle. I mean, it was the sparkly wine for the family. So to drink in the summer, a little bit chilled. And so we are repeating this kind of style. Small amount, of course, 2,000 bottles of this per year. And then the classic Dolcetto. Dolcetto was it is the one we drink more every day. Low acidity, smooth, ripe cherries, nice fruit, always a pleasant wine. Very easy to please also the market because it is more accessible in price point and actually in style. And also there we have like 50 years old wine, so always a Dolcetto has very good minerality and balance. And a tiny small vineyard in the Ovello was planted in the same time as the vineyard Nebbiolo in the Ovello, so very old vineyard of Barbera where we make less than 2,000 bottles. So an elegant rich Barbera, like the style of the Barbera, as we know, is more powerful in fruit, in structure, but no tannins, and so easy to please, easy to sip with different kind of food without having this grape that gives the character to Nebbiolo. So the classic grapes, vinified all in a classic way, I would say. Stainless steel for Dolcetto, short time in oak for the Barbera, stainless steel for the Freisia.
Do you find some of those harder or easier to grow than Nebbiolo?
Dolcetto and Barbera, they have a shorter growing season. The Nebbiolo is the longest, so require more time per hectare, more hours, because of course we do everything by hand, every work is done by hand in the vineyards. And so Nebbiolo is more demanding for in time, and it's more demanding also because being the grape that ripes later, it's more exposed to the weather risks, and so a little bit more difficult. When the Dolcetto with a short growing season, even eventually if it's overcropped, never too high the acidity, never strong the tannins. And so I tasted wines made from overcropped Dolcetto that they are pleasant wine, they're just lighter. Never like this for Nebbiolo. Nebbiolo becomes harsh and difficult and unripe and green. So we have to pay more attention for the Nebbiolo, and it's a more delicate variety for sure.
Have you had a chance ever to do some of the cooking that you originally wanted to do as a child, or has that been lost?
I always had that in my mind, but honestly, I never really worked and never had really the time. My project in doing my own way, my own vinifications, it was taking all my energy 100% and all my life 100%. But always I had this in my mind. It's something I'm working on it now. I have finally restored the old barn of the family that is in the cantina, above the cantina, and I have my own apartment with where the heart of the house is is my kitchen now. And so I have been thinking about this since 10 years. Now I have my ideal kitchen after many years. And so I'm starting to cook with friends. I have sometimes, I'm lucky because I have friends that they are chefs, so they come, they cook something with me. I learn something and I really enjoy after a long day to get home at your kitchen to prepare some food, just at the beginning of the preparation of the food, to open a bottle of wine with friends. And this is really something that is, of course, fantastic and is a pleasure of the life. So it is something I will improve, I hope, on.
In terms of cooking food to complement wines from the Lange or from Barbaresco in particular, what should I be thinking about if I wanted to make dishes that were going to work well with the Nebbiolo or with the Dolcetto?
Of course, what we always say has always been like almost a rule, the meat we cook in the region works very well. The tannins of the Nebbiolo, they display this tendency to be paired very well with the proteins. And of course, we have a lot of veal in the area. We have poultry also. And so when we braise, when we do reduction of sauces, these darker tones, the meat, the proteins goes very well with a Barbaresco, with a Barolo, with a wine that has a certain lot of tannins. But that's, I think, is very limited because we don't have that kind of food so often. We should try to pair with different things, and Barbaresco, with his lightness, delicacy, and he's never heavy, fat, and wine, but it's always almost with higher tones, bright and refreshing. So can be a good companion for also lighter style of food. For example, I love to make, I believe the rice goes very well with the Barbaresco, especially when we make a nice risotto and we have veal stock to make the risotto better than the vegetable stock. So chicken stock or so meat stock. And so mushrooms would be a classic, but also simple Parmigiano. Once you use the veal stock and Parmigiano cheese, it goes so well with Barbaresco. The amido of the rice, it's a perfect pairing. And so it's a matter sometimes to try something that is not classic, but I believe Barbaresco, it's easier to pair than what we think, especially when it gets some age and the tannins, they are silkier, and they're a little bit less aggressive at the palate, becomes way more easy to pair with food.
And as you've traveled around the world, have you seen different markets that are more or less receptive to Barbaresco in particular? Is it sometimes more difficult to, say, sell Barbaresco than Barolo, or is it easier?
Barbaresco has always been a little bit more difficult than Barolo because Barolo is more known, for sure. And so Barbaresco needs to be explained more. Barbaresco is the close brother of the Barolo. They are made in the same way. They're just a different expression of the same grape. But the name is not as known, especially in newer markets. And so in the old markets, the markets close to our region, like Swiss, Germany, Barbaresco is more known. In the States, there is a lot of wine culture, Barbaresco is also more known. But once we go more, for example, in East, like in Asia, Barolo is more known. Barolo is the wine that everybody knows, maybe they never tasted. So Barbaresco has to be explained. And so it's something we, all the producers, we are trying to do. We are a small community, but I can see every one of us is very putting all their efforts to travel, to go, to explain. And for me, as we were saying, I really enjoy traveling. And so I use this excuse to see the world. And at the same time, I propose my wine, and I feel like I'm doing something for our small community, and I'm like other producer. They are doing, of course, better than me, but I'm doing my part. And just to give you an example, in June, no, actually, it would be July. We are organizing now. We are organizing a dinner in Hong Kong with my distributor there, with a Chinese restaurant with Asian food, and they are working on the menu, but we want to try Barbaresco with their food and to do this experience. I believe with the spice some food can have, the spice of the Barbaresco, the kind of structure of the Barbaresco, maybe the use of the soy in that dishes, might be something very interesting. I'm really looking forward to this. So this is also a way to promote other wines.
You mentioned a small community, but it also seems like you have a small amount of vineyard holdings. You added the Albazzani not too long ago, but is it a desire of yours to grow larger or no?
I say no. It's not my desire to grow larger because to grow larger... now I have 7 hectares and I make less than 4,000 cases. I make mainly Nebbiolo. And so I would say, mainly Barbaresco. But I can manage everything now. It's a lot of work, but actually I can follow. I work in the vineyards. I work in my office. I work in the winery. I do the marketing. It's a size that allows me to follow very well all the process. To be there from the beginning to the end, to planting the vines, to be here in New York to show my wine. And so I believe this is a very good way to follow my quality, to see what I did in the vineyard, if it's well received with the customers here. To grow means to organize the wine in a different way. And so once I would be more than what I do, and my winery would be more hectares, should grow suddenly maybe double, and so to have a different structure with more person following different aspects. So I kind of like staying this size would be ideal for me.
Renato Vacca, he's following quality at Cantina Del Pino, and so am I. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much, Levi, for the opportunity. It was a very good pleasure.
Renato Vacca of Cantina Del Pino in Barbaresco.
Hey guys, it's Talitha from Vine Wine. 750 has been the greatest revolution to wine buying in the last 10 years. The ability to be able to go online, search out one item, a Palo Cortado, a new cider, some Chinon, and have all of the answers and the great bottles in front of you in 2 seconds is something that has changed my life. Makes buying easier. I'm able to create lists late at night of wines that I've just tasted that I want to buy later. I'm able to search out wines from new importers that I've never even heard of. I'm able to find crazy stuff from Czechoslovakia that I didn't even know I wanted. You should be on 750. It's the way to be.
The big news for the podcast in 2014, retail partnership, my friend. The wines we care about from the folks who are on the show offered to you by the excellent team at Vine Wine. Go to vine-wine.com for more information about what we're up to and to find the wines. That's vine-wine.com. Check it out. Cheers.
And that's our show today. Thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and our own dedicated website, alldrinktothatpod.com. No apostrophe.